The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thank you for joining us on this Monday, June the 30th, 2025. Again, as always, we appreciate you listening to American Family Radio. Well, joining me in studio is Fred Jackson. Good morning, Brother Fred.
Good to be here. Good to be back.
And Chris Woodward.
Hello.
And that's it, people. Just three of us. Be back from what? You took a little vacation last week?
Yeah, I was off last week and had a wonderful, blessed time at the Billy Graham Training Center, better known as The Cove, over there in Asheville, North Carolina. And just a wonderful week. We had professors from the Dallas Theological Seminary and spent a whole week studying the Book of Romans.
A whole week?
Yeah. 16 different lectures over the course of the week.
16 lectures on one book of the Bible?
Yes. Yeah, it was wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, this is about the fourth year I've been going. Spent a week studying the Book of Daniel. Then another year right. was the Book of Revelation. Another year was the Book of
Daniel. Now, Alex McFarland has a week over there, doesn't he?
Yes, that's coming up in the middle of July.
What's his topic?
I'm not. He's looking at a couple of books, and I just forget what that is. But Alex will be there. He's a very popular speaker there. Mm-hmm. Number of people I talked to said they really look forward to his time there.
Now, when you have 5 days, is that what it was?
Yeah, it opens up usually on a Sunday night with a worship service, and then you have they have two lectures Monday through Thursday. They have two lectures in the morning, and then another one in the evening. So that's Monday through Thursday, and then they do two more on Friday, and you're released around noon.
How many people were there?
300.
Okay.
At least 300. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we've been there. We went there like 4 or 5 years in a row, I think,
yeah.
for a lot of our supporters. This would have been 10 years ago or something like
yeah.
that. Now, let me ask you this. Did you go to downtown Asheville?
I did. In fact, the hotel I stayed in was in the downtown area. And I'll tell you, that hurricane damage from it was September of last year.
Right. That's why I'm asking you this.
I would say 90% of the businesses, the restaurants, gas stations are still closed. In that, right down by the river,
yeah,
those are still, and it, some of them look like war zone. It really did. I mean, you could just imagine the damage created by the flooding. In fact, Samaritan's Purse, which is part of the Billy Graham organization, they had crews that were staying at the Cove while I was there, and they're now in the stage of helping people or rebuilding houses for people.
No.
They're doing a great ministry there. But, yeah, that downtown area, they explain what happened.
Because it's on hills.
Oh, yeah. Right?
I mean, you just go, how's this flood?
Yes.
I know I can understand how the lowland floods.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But the downtown area is kind of elevated, is it?
Well, that's where the river runs through.
Okay.
And that's what flooded.
Okay.
And I used to go down walking. I'd take my walk in the mornings. And you could see some of these buildings, the mud from the river.
Really?
So we're talking 20,
yeah.
30 feet above the river level. And I was just imagine what it must have been like
yeah.
when that flooding. They explain what happened. A week before Hurricane Helene happened, there was a front that stalled over the area. That dumped about 8 inches of rain. And then several days later, the hurricane hit. That dumped 17 inches of rain in that area. And that's what caused the problem. So, yeah, the evidence is still there what this did.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so What was your, give me one or two notes from your time there in terms of what you learned about the book of Romans and the Bible?
Well, you know, that God's plan will never be stopped. God's plan, okay. He's sovereign. But he works through people who are flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start...
Why are you looking at me like that? I mean, we're all flawed.
Right? Put a mirror in here, okay. We're all there.
Okay.
But he's, you know, you talk about Abraham. He was flawed. He was told that he would have a son and that the world would be blessed through Abraham.
Right.
We have been blessed through Abraham. Right. But Abraham had a problem with his whole thing of waiting for the son of Isaac to be born. Mm-hmm. So there's the whole Hagar-Ishmael thing. So God works through imperfect people. I mean, he worked through Isaac. Jacob was a terrible character, but God worked through him, and he was the younger brother of Esau. And then on and on the story goes. When you think about David, when you think about Solomon, God has a plan, but that plan will not be stopped despite the fact that we're all flawed individuals.
Amen.
And then there's chapters 9, 10, 11 are terrific chapters that God still has a special place for the Jewish people, the chosen people, and that their disobedience through the years will not extinguish God's plan for them. And of course, they talk about 1948 shocked the world when Israel became a nation again.
Yep.
And it will be a nation when the Lord returns.
Amen.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm glad you had a wonderful time. Obviously, you learned a lot, and good to have you home. And we have got a lot to talk about, lots mm-hmm. happening in our country and in our world that's we need to pay attention to. Chris, what's our first story
well,
today?
Well, we need to be praying for firefighters all across the country, but certainly those in Idaho. And I say that because in a story you can find on our website, AFN.net, authorities say two firefighters were killed and another two badly injured after authorities say they were ambushed and shot while responding to a wildfire near Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. This happened over the weekend, and Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Morris said firefighters first responded to an early afternoon report of a brush fire at a place called Canfield Mountain. It's described as a popular and scenic hiking and biking area near the outskirts of town. But once the firefighters arrived, someone began shooting at them, and the sheriff says it was very clear that the fire was set to lure the firefighters into an ambush. We also have audio this morning of what's called radio, you know, traffic scanner stuff, where a firefighter says it looks like somebody has set this fire to bring us here and ambush us. Clip one.
I need law enforcement up here immediately. We've got two unresponsive battalions. She's gunshot wounds, multiple gunshot wounds. Two Coeur d'Alene firefighters are down. I'm pinned down behind Battalion 1's rig. It's clear to me that this fire was set intentionally to draw us in.
Now, there's also a quote from the sheriff who says, quote, "These firefighters did not have a chance." A very terrible situation over the weekend.
This was strange.
Yeah.
The story when this first popped up and I read about it. This is in,
Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Yeah, it's a very
beautiful, beautiful area.
Well-known place mm-hmm. in Idaho, and a lot of people I know have moved from Washington State and Oregon to mm-hmm. live in Idaho, and that's a popular destination. But have they called? What happened to the individual? We know the story for why. So just to set this up mm-hmm. or review here, somebody set a fire, and this is what the firefighters believe, right?
Yes.
They set a fire intentionally mm-hmm. to get firefighters to come to the scene. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. They get to the scene, and then they're a sniper, it says,
yes.
Takes two of these guys out,
mm-hmm. yeah.
As in kills them.
Yes.
Right. Two others were injured, and then it occurs to them that something is wrong here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it stopped the sending the firefighters in. Do we know what happened to the individual who shot them? And
that individual appears to be dead. And individuals have not released his name. I've looked at half a dozen news outlets.
Okay,
today.
So there's no. We don't know who the person was yet, and we don't know what his motive was.
Correct.
Well, all of that seems firm. It was an ambush. Fire was deliberately set to draw these firefighters to this location. This guy opens fire on them, kills two of the firefighters. Another one was seriously injured. And then in searching the area, they find the body of this man with a weapon close by.
Did he shoot himself?
That's the implication? That's the indication,
it would seem to be.
Yes.
So I've never in my life heard of somebody having a vendetta against a firefighter. You know what I'm saying? I mean, well, we don't know the story yet. I'm sure it'll come out eventually, but you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So that's why it was so bizarre to read about this story.
And that's why I'm saying I think we need to pray for not only these firefighters, but all firefighters, because these guys and ladies see a lot of stuff on the job, and it does weigh on them. There are firefighters that unfortunately take their life over things they've dealt with on the job, or maybe had personal issues, and things like this, they weigh on you. So we do need to pray for these.
Is there a press conference scheduled for today?
I believe so.
They've had a couple already, just trying to explain to folks. I'm sure by now some of these officials know who this guy is. And I think by the end of the day, we'll know a whole lot more.
Investigators do believe that the gunman did act alone. We believe that he was the only shooter that was on the mountain at that time, the sheriff said.
Yeah,
according to Fox News, a SWAT team has located a deceased man and a nearby firearm hours after a sniper shot and killed two firefighters and injured another while they were battling a wildfire in Idaho. So, so maybe today we'll learn who this person was, and is there any what would be your motivation for doing something like this?
We can only speculate at this point. Maybe he didn't get a job as a firefighter, or it can be something happened to a family member. So we don't know yet.
All right, next story, Chris.
Now to the big, beautiful bill coverage as we speak. Yes, this is going to be a big, beautiful segment.
The big, beautiful bill. How did it ever get that name?
That's what Trump called Donald Trump.
That's a Trumpism thing.
But that is the actual name of the bill. When you look it up on congress.gov, it does say Big Beautiful Bill.
Okay.
Yes.
Just to irritate the Democrats.
I know, right?
Big Beautiful Bill.
Big Beautiful Bill.
Yeah. It is the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, otherwise known as H.R. 1.
Okay. So this is the legislation that's being hashed out in the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
And then going to be sent to President Trump's desk.
Well, at some point, so the Senate is debating it now, and some senators have been concerned about the amount of spending involved. Some senators, like Tom Tillis, we'll get to that in a minute, have been concerned with what he views as Medicaid cuts, even though other Republicans say we're not cutting Medicaid, we're reforming it to help people on it and to make sure it's, you know, costly. And it involves tax breaks, all kinds of stuff. According to Fox, the stuff that's in it as of right now, it would extend the Trump tax cuts, no taxes on tips, no taxes on overtime. There is a tax break for seniors, people on Social Security. It would raise the child tax credit. It would also do things for people that need to write off their state and local taxes. There are some SNAP reforms in there, things like work requirements if you're going to be on what used to be called food stamps. There's border security money, Golden Dome funding, all kinds of things. Now, whatever the Senate approves today, if they've made one little change, it has to go back to the House because the House controls the purse strings. So anything that involves money, it has to go back to the House. Trump wants this done by July 4th. It would appear it's possible. Whether or not that's likely to happen, I can't tell you.
Now, I read where – so is this latest version have the no taxes on – tips?
And yes.
Was it Social Security?
Yes. No taxes on tips would be for like waiters and people that get paid tips on top of their salary.
The big thing, the big selling point for the Republicans is that it maintains the tax cuts that Trump put in place in 2017.
They were set to expire?
Yes.
They were set to expire. So that's been the big selling point. But Senator Tillis, he made claims publicly that the Medicaid, what he called the Medicaid cuts, would impact, for instance, rural hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what other Republicans are saying, as Chris pointed out, it's Medicaid reform. What the Republicans say, they want to put in place some litmus tests before you qualify for Medicaid. The big one being that you have to be if you're able-bodied and able to work, we're not going to continue to give you Medicaid. The other thing that the Republicans are saying, we're going to find out who's in the country illegally, and these people are collecting Medicaid. We're going to stop that. So that's what the Republicans say about Medicaid. But the Democrats, and Senator Tillis seems to be agreeing with the Democrats, that, and I think they're using the figure, 11 million people will be taken off of Medicaid. And Tillis and the Democrats are saying it's going to hurt grandma and it's going to hurt single moms, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Fox airs an ad just about every morning during Fox and Friends. Now, granted, Fox News Channel is a business. They take in a number of things and run ads. But even Fox News Channel runs an ad just about every morning of two people that are discussing her mother's Medicaid and the fact that she's going to lose her Medicaid if this big, beautiful bill passes. So, I mean, this is widely well, covered.
It's hard not to get cynical about all this, right? I mean, it's politics in America, but this one takes the cake for me. This is Chuck Schumer I'm about to quote. What does Trump call him? Crying Chuck?
Mm-hmm.
Crying Chuck Schumer?
Among other things.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, he's a Democrat leader in the Senate from New York. He said, quote, "Republicans can use whatever budgetary gimmicks they want to try and make the math work on paper, but you can't paper over the real-life consequences of adding tens of trillions of dollars to the debt." End of quote. That's from – how does he even do that with a straight face?
I know.
The Democrats – now, the Republicans have joined right in there with them, so to speak, over the years – but neither party has really done a lot to stop, certainly not the Democrats, stop the increase in the national debt. The Democrats never met an expenditure they didn't like.
Exactly.
Yes. So Republicans, you have some of them at least trying to put the brakes on wasteful spending, for example, but what they would call wasteful spending. But for Chuck Schumer to be the fiscal hawk in the Senate is quite amusing.
To your point, Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren, posted on X over the weekend a little video.
What does Trump call her? I'm not saying I called her
Pocahontas.
That. Okay, Pocahontas. Pocahontas.
Yeah. So she posted on X over the weekend that she was going to the Senate to participate with her fellow Democrats in reading this bill, reading every page of this 945-page bill. She never had a problem voting for anything Barack Obama wanted, and I guarantee you.
Did she read the bill then?
Oh, no.
So what did they do? The Democrats read the bill. That's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, that is a good
thing. They read it out loud?
But yes. She's a hypocrite because she voted for things like the Inflation Reduction Act, and I guarantee you she did not read every page of that.
I know. Yeah. So, all right, so what happens now? Where does this go?
Well, if it gets through the Senate, and they are debating it right now on the floor, all the networks have gone back.
I thought it did, 51-49.
That was a procedural vote on the weekend.
To get it to this point.
Oh, I missed that. My bad, guys.
Yeah.
Those darn procedural points.
Yeah,
I didn't catch that.
It is confusing.
I was trying to watch C-SPAN wall to wall all weekend to see what happened. I missed that one.
Yes.
So
they voted over the weekend for today's debate. And if it gets through today's debate, it will pretty much be approved. Okay. And then it will have to go back to the House for whatever changes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and that's what we're here for.
We'll be watching that closely. Be paying attention to that.
Yes.
But President Trump said he wants the bill on his desk by July the 4th,
yes,
right?
Yes, because he wants to have a big, beautiful celebration.
What is it called? The one big, beautiful bill.
Now, several of the things that are in the bill currently, the House-passed version plus what's currently in the Senate version, are things that Trump campaigned on. One of them being no tax on tips. It sounds silly, but that was something that some people in, like, let's say, the restaurant hospitality industry did vote for Trump about because they only get a couple of bucks an hour when you're a waiter. And the fact that you're not going to be taxed on tips.
You mean from the restaurant itself?
Yes. Oh. So I've
never understood that you don't have to pay waiters. They're called servers today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Used to be called waiters and waitresses a long time ago, servers. You don't have to pay them. I never understood why you didn't have to pay them as a restaurant minimum wage.
Right.
I think the restaurant industry argued successfully that they make up for the restaurants don't have to pay the minimum wage. And their argument has been is that they make a whole lot off of tips. That's been the argument.
Well, the debate about a minimum wage or not, notwithstanding, I'm not sure what I'm trying to say there. Put that to the side. That's what I'm trying to say. I've always thought you should pay the your employees a minimum wage. And then tips are on top of that. That's what... that's what I always. What if you did that with every industry? You know, what if the person who works at the gas station just started taking tips instead of you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Please tip here. Of course, you do. We as Americans now are asked to tip on every single thing. What gets me is now at the restaurants when you pay at the register instead of paying at the table. You pay at the register, you order your food and you pay, and then you go sit down, you get your number, and they bring your food to your table. But like last night, this happened to us. We went to a restaurant, and I'm not faulting the lady. She took our order, and it's very friendly and nice. She took our order and everything. Then she takes a credit card, and I do the tap on the credit card. And then she turns the screen around in my face. And she says, when you fill out this, then that'll be the end of the order. And so she's like two feet away from me with her eyes glaring at me. And it says, it starts at 15%, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it starts at 15% tip, 15, 20, 50, 75. I don't know what I'm exaggerating. I think it's 10, 15, 20, and then I don't know. Yeah. 30 or something. Yeah, yeah. We all know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's that moment where you're going like, I think I don't want to go. I don't want to go 10. That's like cheap. That's like I might as well not even tip at all. And I don't want to go 30. Good grief. That's another 30%. Right. So I'll try to split the difference and go. I usually go 15 or 20. Usually 20.
Yeah.
So that when she flips it back around, does she see it? Do they see it when you flip it back?
Oh, yeah.
Are they watching?
Oh, yeah. Huh? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a little worried if you don't tip, they might do something to that pizza.
Yeah. I'll be right back with your food.
Put something in that you don't want. If you don't give a tip, you can see. Anyway.
It's kind of extortion now. It really is. I mean, they're there. And yeah, you're right. 15, 20.
Starts 25. At 15, I think. Which is fine. I usually do 20.
They kind of guilt trip. Not that I don't mind tipping.
Right, sure.
But now it's become this.
No, this is tipping ahead of time. Used to be, you get your service. They bring your drinks. Make sure you got all you need, everything you need. They check on you two or three times during your meal, and then you tip them at the end.
Yeah.
Now it's a tip before you ever even just for getting your food.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it's a tip.
Yeah, that's all.
I think you're tipping the cooks though, and stuff like that. I'm guessing.
Some places still pool tips. In other words, whatever you might tip your server,
he or she
has to share with other people.
That's communism right there. I told somebody that they had the jar.
Yeah, yeah.
They had the jar at this restaurant I went to, and I said, "What is this? This is for tips." I said, "Well, how do you decide who gets it? Well, we all share it." Mm. Well, what if one? Well, so what if somebody's busting their rear end and another person's playing solitaire? Who gets the tip? Well, they all still get the tip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of the time, that's not the case. Everybody works fairly. I didn't like that idea of a communal tipping jar. And also, I think it cuts down on the tips that you would get because if you just think, well, just, you know, I got great service from my server, and I want to tip them 20%, but I don't want to put it in a communal jar, tipping jar. I want to give it to them.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I guess you could still do that if you wanted to. But all right, we're going to take a short time out right here. We would appreciate it if you would tip us. So, if you want to tip. Are you saying that no taxation on tips, or are they going to reduce it?
No tax on tips.
That's in the latest
version? It's in the Senate version that's currently being argued right now, yes.
Yeah. No taxation on tips. All right, we'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence, often alone. Preborn network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now lie lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby. You're saving a mother, too. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, Chris, and we thank you for listening to AFR. Joining us in studio is Steve Crampton. Steve, good morning, Brother Steve.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Steve is an attorney with the Thomas More Society, and he also does some work for us here at AFA, and he's done First Amendment constitutional law for, 30 years or so?
Exactly right. Something a little over like that. Yeah.
So let me ask you, Steve, I ask you to come in and give us a report on the Supreme Court's decisions that were announced last week, because these were some big ones. Of course, I guess all Supreme Court decisions are big ones, but these were some good ones, too. There were some good ones, too. Would you review some of those, if you would?
Yes, Tim. Thanks again for having me on. You know, the practice of the Supreme Court.
I'm not going to tip you, by the way. We'll just get that out. Get out that out of the way now. Are we good on that?
I'm shocked, actually, okay. But
I don't know
live
if
with it.
Get tipped or not, but we're not going to do that today. Go ahead.
You are familiar enough with the Supreme Court practice to know that it's almost always in the last 30-plus years that it's the last week of the term that the really monumental...
They save the juicy ones for last.
The juicy ones that tend to have much more dispute with the among the justices and so forth. And this year was no exception. We had the birthright citizenship case where technically, the issue was whether birthright citizenship is, as President Trump has basically reinterpreted or interpreted it by via the executive order, or if it's more like it had been treated by the leftist kind of Obama interpretations, where if you just basically cross the border and give birth, then automatic citizenship attaches. But the court actually did not decide that ultimate issue, right? And so what we had instead was a ruling that was monumental with its effect by virtue of the fact that the court definitively, I would say, held that nationwide injunctions are off the table beyond the authority of the district courts.
I'm clapping. We are clapping.
And as we all know, that has been the tool of lawfare leftist attempts to derail President Trump and the new presidential administration and their agenda. So that is absolutely huge in and of itself. So the birthright citizenship, as I say, the ultimate merits of that will be decided later.
Right. So let me ask you this about this. So this has bothered a lot of people. I mean, especially conservatives, because you go, This is overreach by you're telling me that one federal judge somewhere in America can issue a national injunction on a law or an executive order. Now, they can issue, here's what, would you agree with me? They can issue an injunction that applies to their jurisdiction.
Of course.
Yes, their jurisdiction. But then that's the reason you have other federal judges who are overseeing other parts of the country. They can do the same thing if they want to.
Very good, right?
But to have one judge, one federal judge, be able to issue a national injunction, basically that judge becomes king.
It's exactly right, Tim. It is the imperial judiciary,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
One judge could issue that ruling that binds every single American, or even the non-citizens who are present. Even the president, under the power of the executive order, can only bind those who are in the executive department. So really, that single district, unelected district court judge becomes more powerful than the president.
But the good news is the Supreme Court ruled in a 6-3 decision that is not constitutional.
Correct.
Okay, so that's good news.
That is huge.
Huge.
Really,
huge,
really
huge.
Good news.
Okay, what other decisions?
May I say it in Trumpian terms?
Yes, please.
It's huge. That was huge.
I would say beautiful.
It's even beautiful.
It's one beautiful ruling. Yeah.
Yes. Huh? Okay, another really, really big case was Mahmoud against Taylor. Mm-hmm. Out of
sounds like a prize fight.
I know, right?
Mahmoud in one quarter.
The infamous Montgomery County, Maryland.
Okay.
Yes.
Which
okay.
has been just a hotbed of leftist initiatives, especially in the school system, right? Mm-hmm. So in this case, the school board, in its infinite wisdom, adopted a rule and a policy of implementing pro-LGBTQ books in their curriculum. Now, this is a classic case, too, I think, of a Trojan horse sort of undertaking. When it was adopted, they assured the parents and everybody that was concerned, we have an opt-out provision. Mm-hmm. If you don't like and you don't want your children reading this book, by golly, you just stay away. Well, a year or so down the road, guess what? Too many were opting out.
Yeah.
And so the school board reverses policy. Now they've got the curriculum in, and they say, thou shalt read it. No opt-outs.
Oh.
How about that?
Little bait and switch there.
Little bait and switch there. And so this, we've seen this for decades, too, where we have struggled against the power of the school boards to impose really propaganda and indoctrination
on our children.
Nothing
to do with reading, writing, or
nothing
arithmetic.
And so this group of parents, and so the reason that you've got Mahmoud leading on the plaintiffs, the lead plaintiff, is because this was a coalition. Muslims, Orthodox, Jews, Christians put together as a very well planned out lawsuit, all of which came forward and said, no, this is an erosion of our free exercise rights, our parental rights.
Yeah.
And again, the court, in another 6-3 decision, said that's exactly right. And this opinion, written by Justice Alito, Alito, I think, has almost dedicated his career to championing a reinvigoration of the First Amendment, fundamental First Amendment rights of parents and others under the free exercise.
Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas, they both need to be on Mount Rushmore of Supreme Court justices, and they're
really
serving together. It's kind of like
yes.
having Willie Mays and Hank Aaron.
That's
on the same team.
Right?
These guys are just incredible, and I hope they can stay another 5 years, although they're in their 70s, right?
And you know, the rumors have been rampant that they both are interested in retiring.
Well,
so pray for them.
Now would be the time to go because of President Trump, a Republican, is in the White House. And the Republicans have 53-40. You're not going to get any better than that.
And that's the logic.
Yeah.
On the other hand, are you ever going to get another Samuel Alito or Clarence Thomas?
I hope
guys, for their years of experience and working inside the court, they have achieved a degree of gravitas that I'm not sure a new associate justice would attain.
Were there any more rulings last week?
There were several. One of them, let me just say briefly,
and then Fred, jump in here.
The appointments clause case, yeah. Right?
What is that?
Sounds a little bit like this is the clause that basically you're dealing with when nominating new Supreme Court justices, for instance, right? Article 2, Section 2 gives the United States president the power of appointment, right? Mm-hmm. With superior principal offices, they must be confirmed with the advice and consent of the Senate. Inferior appointments do not. Uh-huh. So this case involved basically, to get way into the weeds, it's a department within the Health and Human Services that oversees some of the recommendations regarding policies dealing with food and so forth. And what you have is some of these guys were fired. It's another lawfare case, in effect, right? Uh-huh. Challenging the president's authority again and again, the power of the executive to control who in the world is working in the executive department. And again, the court comes down and says these were inferior officers, not principal officers. They did not need to go through the Senate and so forth. And so this is a reaffirmation of presidential and executive authority that, again, was, I think, a dead right ruling. So we in this case, however, there was the twist. Normally, the three dissenters— can you name them? Fred can name them, right? It's the leftists.
Yes.
Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan.
The ones that rule off feelings.
Exactly. In this case, you had Justice Thomas and Gorsuch in the dissent. Mm. So it's a little different dynamic, but I think the result came out correctly. And, you know, the court, for all the criticism, and I've been among those that criticize it, for one, they're just timid to take these cases. Mm. In this case, once they finally got to the decision-making, I think they did the right thing. And so kudos to President Trump for appointing three justices that ruled correctly in these cases. And long-term, I think the country's going to be much better off.
I want to go back to the Maryland case. The parental rights issue is nationwide.
Yes.
This was Montgomery County, as you pointed out. How important do you think it was that it was a coalition? That it was a coalition of Muslim parents, Jewish parents, Christian parents.
Hugely so. Yeah. Sadly, it shouldn't be, as you know, Fred. Mm. The merits are the merits, regardless who brings the case. But look, we have, AFA has been party to cases where it was only our kind of people that were the plaintiffs. And when the court sees that, and of course the press and everybody else comes in and tries to undermine the case, they can do it without any real pushback. When you get a coalition like this, it's much more difficult.
One other question: the Supreme Court didn't they rule something about states being able to?
Oh yes. Yes.
Stop abortion with tax dollars.
Medina v. Planned Parenthood.
Medina. Yes. Sorry, absolutely.
For those who don't know, what are we talking about here?
We are talking about the provision of subsidies to usually low-income folks. And Planned Parenthood, of course, has had a huge role in really monopolizing the take of the federal dollars under those rules. States like, in this case, South Carolina said, wait a minute, we're a participant in this process as well. We have rights. And we say no to the folks like Planned Parenthood that are really abortion providers and so forth. This isn't really medical assistance that you're giving. And several other states have undertaken this.
Right.
In this case, the Supremes decided to review the matter and decide states' rights versus federal rights. You know, another big constitutional kind
of
issue.
They did or didn't decide?
They did decide.
They decided
the
in favor of the states having
have the right. That's exactly
that's
right.
Great. So again,
huge clout, win. That's exactly
great news
right.
That. Yeah. So the Supreme Court, wow, you're talking about a bunch of wins here, 6-3, 7-2. But the decision was that, so if pro-life states want to say no to paying using federal tax, they don't want to be told that if they get money from the federal government, which all states do, that they then have to pay for abortions with that money.
That is right.
And many states, this initiated in South Carolina, said no.
Right.
We're not going to do that. And the Supreme Court says that the state of South Carolina and other states have the right to not pay for abortions, right?
Yes, and so some of our folks are working right now, Jameson Taylor, to put this blueprint in front of every other red state to begin with and just say, get this passed right away.
Right. Yeah.
Well, this is, listen, you might say, well, how did this all happen? To what do we attribute this? I'll tell you, for the most part, you can attribute this to Donald Trump beating Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go back to 2016 because then candidate Trump, you remember, he made a commitment to appoint pro-life judges to the, really he was making a commitment to appoint constitutional judges, those who follow the Constitution. It wasn't just a one issue thing, but President Trump made a commitment. Now he was following President Trump. So the fact that he was able to defeat Hillary Clinton, of course, we know how narrow a margin that was. He lost the popular vote, but he won the Electoral College vote. That saved the Supreme Court, okay, from a complete total takeover by the far lefties.
Mm-hmm.
No telling what our country would look like right now had he not beaten her.
Yes.
Okay, so I know at the time a lot of Christians were going, Christians are a large voting bloc.
And I was going, among them.
Okay, and
who is this guy?
Yeah, I know. We were going this New York playboy billionaire ain't one of us, okay? So I don't know what we're going to get here, but we're going to go with it, okay? And President Trump was championing a lot of other issues that was appealing to conservative voters.
Yes.
So, President Trump followed his commitment.
Not his heart. He followed his commitment.
He followed his commitment to appoint judges the best that he knew how that followed the Constitution. He was relying on the Federalist Society for their recommendations because he didn't know what he was doing. That much, and he admitted that President Trump did. He said, "I'm going with the ones that Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society said were good to appoint." So, anyway, I just wanted to go back to that moment in time in 2016 and say, if you voted for President Trump now, then you can pat yourself on the back because he won, and we were able to get to the kind of decisions that Steve just reported on the last 15 minutes.
May I say in that context too, Tim, I think that's exactly right. He was transparent, right? Mm. And today that's the term he's using in describing his administration.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is he really has been. I mean, it's a phenomenal thing. He put the list out there, told us, here are the 11
nobody
top
does
courses.
That.
It's
he put the list of judges he would appoint.
Yeah.
And prior to being elected.
Exactly. And he delivered
on
that promise.
I agree. Nothing but applause for President Trump in his first 4 years and appointing federal judges to the Supreme Court. And so I haven't heard much about his appointments this time. Of course, he's only been in office 6 months. But
he's just getting rolling on this.
Yeah. I know that we here at American Family Association are doing our part behind the scenes to influence his decisions on who he picks, to be a federal judge or to be a Supreme Court justice.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, listen, Steve. Thanks so much for that. Yeah. That's good news, man.
It's tremendous.
Yes.
Fred's going to tip you. Okay. So if you would just take your screen over there and sit beside him, and
it's all in Canadian dollars.
And what you need to do, let me just tell you how this works. Start with 25%. And then have a 25% box, a 50% box, and 100% box.
Let me take notes. Hold on. Let me write this down.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Steve Crampton joining us. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. All right, Chris, what's next?
One other Supreme Court ruling to go over is a case called Free Speech Coalition v. Paxton. And this is a ruling last week where justices ruled in favor of Texas and its age verification law for pornography websites.
Yeah. Hang on, Steve. I didn't realize Chris was going to bring this up, and I'm glad you did.
It's going to increase the tip, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Gotta have to increase. So let me just say, okay, so states... some states, including this was Texas, and other states did this too, said if you're going to go for pornographic websites, you're going to have to verify your age.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Just like you do to get a driver's license or to get alcohol or get tobacco, the states, in this case, again, Texas, deemed it that this kind of material should not be accessed by anyone under 18 years old. I guess it's 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so people on the left argue, no, this is a violation of free speech.
Yes, and here's the argument. I mean, listen, they are as clever as they can be. Notice again the name of the case, Free Speech Coalition. Who's against free speech?
Right, right. I know. So,
that's the left, another Trojan horse kind of image, right? So they come in and they say, wait a minute, if you're going to require this age verification and so forth, you're infringing the rights of adults who have a right to access this because it's protected by free speech, which in itself, by the way, is a ruling that needs to be revisited, right? But we're not there. That's the one sad footnote in this case that I would add is no justice, including Justices Alito and Thomas, even footnoted and said, we dispute that this material is protected by the First Amendment at all. It shouldn't be, right? That aside, they correctly upheld the right of a state. It just seems like a no-brainer to most of us, doesn't it? To prohibit and require that the providers of this material take the
verify that you're dealing with an adult.
Right. Yeah. Don't let children on there. Are you kidding me? You're fighting that? Yeah. And yet, you've got, again, the dissenters.
So the Supreme Court said, yes, states have a right to regulate obscenity or pornographic websites and prohibit minors from accessing them, at least as it relates to, you know, you go on the internet, if you go to a pornography site now, you have to enter a government-issued ID to verify your age.
Something like that.
So anyway.
Yeah.
And that was after the Supreme Court upheld Tennessee's ban on the gender mutilation of minors, too. So
another
states
huge
rights.
Win. I mean, they just keep coming, right?
Yeah. So anyway. All right. Again, this goes back to the election of 2016. We're reporting all these good news decisions by the Supreme Court. Had Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump, we would be talking about the very opposite results here.
That's for sure.
May I just put a footnote in there, too? Isn't there a sense here for all of these decisions? At the end of the day, it just looks like common sense to most Americans.
I know.
We're just returning to common sense and sanity here.
Amen.
Right?
Yeah. I have one more question.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to have to speculate on this. Will Thomas retire while Trump is in office to give Trump an opportunity to get a conservative?
I'd say the odds are yes.
Okay. Well, in addition to Steve answered, can I answer too?
Sure.
To the added tip.
Yeah, add that tip. So the question is, when will Clarence Thomas do this? Because not only do you need a Republican in the White House, Donald Trump, you need a margin in the Senate to confirm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I could be wrong. I just don't think it's going to get any larger than 53-47 for the Republicans.
But don't you think y'all are the political observers? As the best I understand, the midterms looks like the Senate races will not change the majority. So he may buy another couple of years. Yeah.
Well, and Sir Clarence Thomas is looking at that, too.
I think so.
And Samuel Alito, perhaps. Go ahead.
I have a question. Would you say that Justice Thomas is, like, the strongest in terms of gun rights when it comes to gun cases?
Probably, yes.
With that said, it would seem to me that Trump really needs to, and perhaps groups that are coming up with lists for him to consider, they need a really staunch pro-Second Amendment guy to replace Thomas.
Agreed. And again, back to my comment earlier of the frustration of the timidity of the court. Chief Justice Roberts, really Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Barrett, they seem to want to just say, we're just not going to take these cases. And there are some bad lower court rulings on gun rights right now they could have taken. And again, they just turn away. So that whole coalition that's necessary just to have cert granted is a big deal.
I want to know when we're going to have an evangelical Christian on the Supreme Court.
It's been a minute.
Have you been holding your breath?
We've got five Catholics, right? Something like that.
Maybe
we've got
more.
A couple of Jews, an atheist, and a...
Back in the day with Ketanji Brown Jackson, there was the belief among evangelicals that she was actually an evangelical Christian.
What?
I'm thinking somebody missed the boat on that personally. That's just me. But
really?
I'm not kidding.
But what I'm saying is I don't have anything against – listen, I'm not anti-Catholic by any means.
Understood.
We have a lot of Catholic listeners and supporters, so that's fine. I'm just saying if we want to make the Supreme Court look like America, can we not have one evangelical on the Supreme Court out of nine?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do our people not go to law school?
Is this religious profiling, or what are you doing here?
I'm trying to make, like I said,
Liberty University
like America.
Is like, we have a law school, people. Yeah.
So I want to get back here to Jackson. Someone labeled her an evangelical Christian.
Someone close to us, as a matter of fact.
Because her husband's some kind of evangelical.
I don't even know. Hey,
listen, when she failed on that question about defining a woman.
What is a woman?
What is a woman?
By the way, may I say in this is maybe getting again into the weeds, but part of the importance of AFA and others being involved early on in judicial nominations. Mm. When they moved Merrick Garland from his seat on the D.C. Court of Appeals to become Attorney General, there was a plan among the Obama wing of the Democrat Party to place Ketanji Brown Jackson in that seat, which they did, and then move her up to the High Court, which they did. This was a three-step, real clever move. And so if you're asleep at the wheel when they're nominating these lower court justices, you may be too late to weigh in at the Supreme Court.
Good point.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you all for having me.
That
all
was
right.
great.
You're listening. So some big wins at the Supreme Court. And if you voted for Donald Trump in 2016 in his presidential race against Hillary Clinton, that is the reason we're reporting these good news stories about the Supreme Court that we're all that we've just been reflecting on the last few minutes here.
Can you imagine, too, having conservatives on that Supreme Court are going to be needed if this Democrat who has been nominated to run for mayor in New York and what he wants to do there.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, you got a far left wackadoodle.
He's to the left of far left socialists.
No, he makes AOC looks conservative.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Oh, yeah.
Ocasio-Cortez. Yes, she's a rabid right winger compared to this guy.
Wow.
Compared to this guy running for who may win the mayoral office in New York City.
Yes.
All right, we'll be back momentarily with more of today's issue. Steve Paisley Jordahl will be in studio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.